Conservative? You bet. Controversial? Right again. It's time to squabble on the Jim Benson Show.
Hello, and welcome to another edition of the Jim Benson Show. Conservative talk radio covering the issues that concern you here on the BBS Radio Network. Today, I'm going to continue discussing the 2020 election and its aftermath, including the ongoing efforts to bring before the American public more of the massive evidence supporting the many allegations of election fraud and the struggle to establish integrity for future elections in this country. If you've been following this controversy in alternative media, because it's been shut down in the establishment media mouthpieces, you have strong suspicions that not only did major fraud occur in the 2020 election that swept Joe Biden and other radical leftist Democrats into office, but that this is being covered up on a grand scale. Whether the American public will ever see conclusive proof confirming our worst fears about election fraud and its results for our country remains to be seen. But there are determined efforts toward that end continuing around the nation, most particularly in the key swing states that decided the presidential election. Of those, the most significant have been in the swing states of Arizona and Georgia. In these two states, the legislatures have been working to investigate the fraud allegations and establish legislation to guard against it in the future. Georgia recently passed new laws correcting at least some of the insane election abuses that we saw occur in 2020, such as essentially doing away with voter ID requirements and promotion of the fraud-prone mail-in ballots. Amazingly, this has sparked boycotts from big corporations such as Coca-Cola, Delta, and American Airlines, and Major League Baseball, which is canceling holding the upcoming All-Star Game in Georgia. I keep remembering Vladimir Lenin's famous pronouncement about capitalists. He said, "When it comes time to hang the capitalists, they'll be eager to sell us the rope." These vile, venal corporate fools obviously have money tied up with their supporting the goals of the political left, for example, election fraud, and will sell out our country for it. They are deserving of major boycotts of themselves by those of us who want honesty and integrity in the electoral process. Case in point, Major League Baseball. Just today, the Epoch Times has an article under the following headline: MLB boycotted Georgia a day after expanding China deal. The article states, quote, "Major League Baseball has extended and expanded its contract with a Chinese telecommunications giant shortly before boycotting the state of Georgia over the league's disagreement with the election reforms recently enacted by the Peach State's democratically elected governor and legislature." Continuing the quote, "Chinese state media reported on April 1 that the MLB will continue to be aired on the streaming platform operated by Chinese tech giant Tencent, which has significant ties to the Chinese Communist Party, the CCP. Tencent is of the Chinese companies that had temporarily dropped NBA games as a form of censorship after former Houston Rockets general manager Daryl Morey spoke out in support of the pro-democracy protests in Hong Kong." Close quote. I say boycott MLB, boycott Coca-Cola, Delta, and American Airlines, and the rest of the corporate cabal and rabble that will sell out our country for the business they can do with their communist Chinese masters. In Arizona, the state legislature is pressing ahead after intense opposition from Democrats and rhinos, you know, Republicans in name only, who put up vigorous legal challenges with a full forensic audit of paper ballots and voting equipment. Now, 5 months after the election, I'm concerned about how much wrongdoing will be uncovered, given that all that we've heard about ballots dumped in trash receptacles, ballot burning and shredding, reprogramming of voting equipment and the like. But as they say, better late than never. Georgia also is about to embark on a similar ballot and voting machine audit and investigation, I understand. The other swing states, which all have Democrat governors, seem to be having an even more difficult time investigating and passing legislation to correct for election fraud. But efforts continue in those states as well. Other states around the country also, thankfully, are looking at and advancing vote and election fraud preventive legislation. I agree with President Trump that the election was stolen. I believe it was done through sophisticated, well-planned, and coordinated acts by evil people inside and outside the country. And once this mission was accomplished, there has been a huge and well-coordinated effort by the political left and its allies among the so-called deep state government bureaucracy and globalist business elites to cover it all up and persuade the American people that sleepy, creepy Joe Biden was legitimately elected in a gigantic electoral landslide. Joe Biden is, as I have said, the epitome of corruption, who sold his soul to the communists and globalists and now does their bidding at every turn. As pro-Trump attorney Sidney Powell observed, there are trillions of dollars worth of sweet business deals fabulously enriching both American corporate elites and their business partners among the Chinese Communist Party that they believed were jeopardized if Trump held the presidency. And since they were unable to dislodge Trump via the numerous sham scandals these bad actors sought so vigorously to smear him with, they fell back on a conspiracy to remove Trump and his threat to their fortunes through election fraud, which has succeeded. After so many defeats of efforts to reveal the extent of this fraud and the people behind it, I unfortunately despair that we will ever truly get to the truth of all that's happened, not to mention correct these abuses and bring the people responsible to justice. As you will see later in the program, however, others continue to be hopeful that we will see truth and justice prevail in the end. My greatest fear, though, is what I see as the inevitable consequence of this election coup, which is the ultimate takeover of our country by communists and their allies, the world government-promoting globalists, and the achievement of their goal of the radical transformation of the USA into a vassal state of communist China. I know that sounds crazy to a lot of people, but all you have to do is look around. There's a lot of evidence for it. This would be a state where the freedoms, rights, and privileges we have so long enjoyed as Americans will disappear as we are subjugated and relegated to the status of peasants. There's significant evidence that foreign countries, including communist China, were involved in one way or another in getting Joe Biden installed in the White House. And if you've been following reporting and commentary about the Chinese Communist Party, you know that they have publicly stated their goal of dominating the world by 2049, which is the 100th anniversary of the CCP's takeover of China. The CCP, which has given millions to Joe Biden and his family members and set them up with sweetheart business deals, can be considered to virtually own Beijing Biden, as he is called, who's been historically soft on dealing with communist China, having failed to ever establish any diplomatic victories over the PRC. That is the People's Republic of China. More specifically, the CCP, the Communist Chinese Party. That the PRC knows it has Biden in its pocket is evident by the contempt with which its representatives treated Secretary of State Anthony Blinken and the rest of the U.S. delegation in the recent talks with their PRC counterparts in Alaska. Believing it has nothing of consequence to fear from the paper tiger it now sees as the USA, the PRC is growing increasingly belligerent and aggressive in its relations with the U.S. and other countries and with what it regards as its possessions, Hong Kong and Taiwan. The PRC recently told Biden not to dare cross the PRC's red line on Taiwan, which it appears to be preparing to invade and take over in the near future. And what is really going on with old Joe Biden anyway, given his well-known and ongoing cognitive failings? It's clear Biden is eager to serve the interests of his masters, but who exactly are these people, and who is formulating the policies and making the decisions which Biden and the Biden administration are promoting and executing? One person we might expect to be involved in running Biden is the radical left-wing billionaire George Soros, who's long been advocating the insane open borders concept Biden is now employing, along with advocating that communist China must dominate and lead the vaunted new world order of world government Soros and his globalist elitist allies promote. FreeBeacon.com has reported that, quote, Soros poured more than $70 million into election activity backing Biden's candidacy this past cycle, more than three times his previous high of $22 million in the 2016 election cycle, close quote. Israel365News.com reported in December that six of Biden's top cabinet picks belong to radical Soros-linked organizations. Among his other actions to transform and destroy America as we have known it, Soros is a heavy supporter of something called the Constitution 2020 movement. The website keywiki.org has reported that this movement, quote, is based upon the Constitution in 2020, a book published by Oxford University Press that is a powerful blueprint for implementing a Marxist vision of constitutional law in the years ahead, close quote. One of Joe Biden's most vocal critics has been President Trump's attorney, Rudy Giuliani. Giuliani, former mayor of New York City and a well-known and respected former federal prosecutor, has often referred to Joe Biden and his family, who've become fabulously wealthy through business deals accomplished by leveraging Joe Biden's position as vice president, as the Biden crime family. Here's some audio from a video interview done with Giuliani by the Daily Caller and broadcast on a channel on Rumble.com, in which Giuliani talks about a business deal Joe Biden was allegedly involved in with some of his family members and Chinese communist spies. The deal, being entered into after Joe Biden left office as vice president in 2017, apparently ultimately fell apart, but not before the Chinese communists involved arranged for nearly $5 million to be handed over to Biden's son, Hunter Biden, for himself and his family. Tony Bobulinski, a businessman brought in to head the company being set up in the deal, has publicly discussed the affair and claimed that his life and the lives of his family were endangered as a result. Please play soundbite one.
He allowed Chinese tariffs to go up, ripped apart Pennsylvania, ripped apart Michigan, ripped apart Ohio, American jobs gone, millions go into the private equity fund of his son. And I'm supposed to believe those are not connected. I know very few people. I don't know anybody that goes into business with the Chinese communist government or with the top spy master of the Chinese communists or the top intelligence officer of the Chinese communists, all identified as such by Hunter Biden. Xi Jinping was, according to Hunter Biden, the richest man in the world. He was a high-level Chinese communist. He was a well-known intelligence master who set up fronts for the Chinese government, which is, if you had any sophistication at all, you would figure out that's what this business was. Joe got sucked into a communist front by a master at it, Xi Jinping. Number two guy in the business, Patrick Ho, is identified by Hunter Biden as the chief spy master in China. And the third one is a middle-level spy named Guanwen Dun. So just exactly why would the Bidens go into business with an intelligence officer and a spy master of the Chinese government? That's not like going to give a speech. It's not like going into business with some business. You're going to business with a spy master and an intelligence officer. They're giving you $10 million a year in order to make introductions, which is pretty squishy. And then you steal another $5 million from your partner by getting a $4.9 million forgivable loan. So you want to begin with the crimes? Well, we can begin with the crime of fraud. They defrauded Bobulinski. It's right there in the documents. They were supposed to get $10 million for the business. Instead, Hunter diverted $4.9 billion, and I have the records that it's going directly into the bank as a forgivable loan just to the Biden. So they stole from the business. They defrauded Bobulinski and the other partners. Second, you get pretty close to an espionage charge. They're doing business with Chinese communist spies and taking money from Chinese communist spies. I would think even the most ill-informed would figure out taking money from a Chinese communist spy. Gee, that could be espionage. None of the morons in the press picked that up. Do you know who says that his partner is a Chinese communist spy? Hunter Biden says that. That should have blown up like that. I mean, we arrest people immediately when they're seen with spies. I have a text. You can read it. You don't see it anywhere. That says that his partner, Patrick Ho, is the chief spy master of China. What's he doing with a partner giving him money who's the chief spy master of China? You don't get paid by spy masters and intelligence officers. for a business, you get paid them to compromise you. There's a definite espionage charge against them. This is a serious national security violation. Can you imagine if Donald Trump had a contract like this with Russian agents before he ran for president?
Well, on that note, would it not be improper for Biden to be doing this if he weren't running for president? Would that be okay?
No. It would be espionage in any event. I can't do a contract with a Chinese spy. What do you think a contract with a Chinese spy is for? To make Chinese tea? Why do you think the Chinese government gives $10 million to a former public official? Why do you think Chinese espionage agents give money to these people for introductions? It's obviously an espionage operation. It's a front. It's a front to inveigle the Bidens so you own them, which they do. They own the Bidens. And now we go back to watch how Biden has operated. He has never, ever won a negotiation with China. Ever. He allowed Chinese tariffs to go up, ripped apart Pennsylvania, ripped apart Michigan, ripped apart Ohio, American jobs gone, millions go into the private equity fund of his son. And I'm supposed to believe those are not connected? I was born in Brooklyn. I wasn't born, on the moon.
On Joe Biden's cognitive impairment, play soundbite two, please.
Welcome to Rudy's Common Sense. I'm Rudy Giuliani, and today we are going to touch on a very sensitive subject. And we want to do it carefully and responsibly, but it just has to be done. And that's the situation with the president's what appears to be cognitive incapacity. Now, there's just too many examples, and they're too prominent, although ignored or downplayed by mainstream media. They are not being ignored by our adversaries. In fact, I'd say over the last week, our adversaries have learned how to weaponize this cognitive impairment of Biden's. And I think I'll show you exactly how and make some suggestions about what we can do about it. I mean, last week was a bad week for Biden, and there haven't been too many good ones, if there has been a good one. But last week, in addition to all the other things that happened, the not-so-secret big secret kind of got blown up big time. The first one to seem to have picked this up was Russia's Putin, and that is weaponizing the Biden impairment. And he did it directly, as we'll see. But the CCP representatives in Anchorage and Kim Jong-un and his sister did it in a somewhat more passive-aggressive way. It's a little hard to say how much of it was their agenda, how much of it was opportunistic, but there was a little of both. So it might be useful if we do this. Let's take a look at what happened or some of the incidents that happened since Joe Biden had become president. Because the Russians, the Chinese, and the North Koreans, and the Iranians will see it differently than many of you get to see it, because you get to see it through the lens of a, frankly, you know, totally Biden in love press corps. We need to know, what is this? What's going on with Joe Biden? We know something is going on with his mind. If you don't know it, you're not observant. If you don't know it, you just don't want to know it. We don't know how bad it is. Like when someone diagnoses, let's say, because I'm not going to diagnose this disease, but somebody has to, and we got to know what the diagnosis is. Let's say it was cancer. The president had cancer. Well, we would have a right to know what kind of cancer. What's the prognosis? I had prostate cancer. I had a 10% chance of dying, 90% chance of living. Well, that's a nice numbers, but 10% is still pretty big. I was the mayor. I let people know that. We've got to know, what is it? What are they going to do about it? What's the prognosis? And here is the final question. Everybody says this. He's not making decisions. You can tell. You can just tell. He doesn't have the ability to focus enough to really make some of these complex decisions. So who's making the decisions? When he decided to bomb Syria, when he decided to say Putin was a killer and start this whole thing. When he decided not to call Blinken and Sullivan and pull them out of Anchorage. That could have done that, you know, like has been done when we want to show strength. Who's making those decisions? He's not. So there are only a few people that could be doing it. His chief of staff, to be the vice president, could be someone we don't know. But we have a right to know it. And we will, I will, pursue it until we get the answer. You deserve it. We have to have the answer because this is our country and we have to reclaim it. It doesn't belong to them. They are the people that we selected to serve us, not to dictate to us, not to hide significant facts from us. That has happened long enough, and it's got to come to an end.
Speaking of the Communist Chinese Party's influence on the USA, I'd like to play some excerpts from the last two episodes of a six-part video series on the rise of communism in America and the West by journalist David Zhang. These were played on his podcast series Beyond the Noise, which is available on YouTube and also on Rumble.com and elsewhere on the internet. I consider Zhang to be an outstanding journalist and commentator. He has personally attended pro-democracy demonstrations in Hong Kong and the pro-Trump rally in Washington, D.C. January 6th, though he did not participate in the breach and disturbance at the Capitol building there later that day. Here's the audio from the fifth of his series. Please play soundbite 3.
Good evening and welcome to the fifth episode of this special series. Tonight we discuss how law and order have become tools of destruction by communism. Its antithetical justification to equality and peace. It's to oppose those who uphold order, while corrupting those who judge the law. Join us as we explore how communism infiltrated the law and order of the United States. What is the point of having laws? Is it to uphold humans to punish crimes? Law is the iron force of fairness and justice that affirms good and punishes evil. What is good and what is evil must be understood by those who write laws. From the perspective of faith, these criteria come from the divine. Now, the teachings of sages and religious scriptures provided the basis of the laws that govern human society. The Code of Hammurabi, enacted in the ancient Babylon, is one of the first and earliest sets of written laws that have been found. Engraved in the stone tablet above the code itself is a powerful scene. Shamash, god of the sun and justice, bestowing the laws upon King Hammurabi. And this is the depiction of the god granting a human sovereign the authority to govern his people using the rule of law. For Hebrews, the Ten Commandments in the Old Testament were considered to be both divine and secular law simultaneously. From 4th century Roman emperors to the East Roman Justinian I and his successors to the first of Britain's Anglo-Saxon kings, Alfred the Great, the legal system took the Ten Commandments and Christian doctrine at its inspiration. Followers of religion believed that in order to be considered legitimate, the law must accommodate divine standards of the good and the evil, as well as religious teachings. The same was true in ancient China, where historically the law was promulgated by imperial decree. The emperor, or called Son of Heaven, was required to follow providence and the principles of heaven and earth. This is the Tao or Wei, imparted by Lao Tzu and the Yellow Emperor. The Han Dynasty Confucian scholar Dong Zhuxu said, "The greatness of Tao originates from heaven, heaven never changes, and neither does the Tao." Communist parties are anti-theist cultists, and they aim to sever a society's link to its ancestral culture and traditional values, and they will never follow the teachings of righteous gods in their legislative principles. The entire idea of communism is built on hatred. It was never realistic to expect that the communist parties would make any sincere attempts to maintain fairness or justice. And I'm sure we all understand something like this. No legal system can hope to account for any and all possible forms of conflict and provide judgments for each. Thus, laws must factor in the subjectivity of all parties. A judge must follow the spirit of the law to give a verdict that aids by the principle of benevolence. By contrast, communism is rooted in hatred. It not only hates gods, but also hates the culture, lifestyle, and traditions that the divine established for humanity. And therefore, how could a communist state ever achieve true peace or uphold if their entire origin stems from hate? Now, to understand the current political lawmaking body and its actions towards communism, we can use the Soviet-based case study. In the months following the Bolshevik overthrow of the Russian government in 1917, hundreds of thousands of people were killed in the course of the political struggle. The Bolsheviks established the All-Russian Extraordinary Commission for Combating Counter-Revolutionary and Sabotage, abbreviated Cheka, and endowed it with powers of summary execution. From 1918 to 1922, the Chekists killed no less than 2 million people without trial. Communism uses man-made law. And I say man-made because its origin and intention are never to correct those who fail to abide by the rules, but rather to punish. Now, this difference fundamentally signals the drastic decline in human nature. Laws today are made in response to an action, and it serves to punish subsequent violations. However, it fails to actually teach those who violate the law how to correct themselves. This is even worse under communism. While communism ignores the existing rule of law to perpetrate acts of state terror, it puts on a show in front of the Western countries by claiming it's committed to upholding their own law. It does this so that it can engage, infiltrate, and subvert free societies through the avenue of trade and economic partnerships, cultural exchanges, and geopolitical cooperation. For instance, at the onset of the China's reform and opening up in 1979, the CCP passed a criminal procedure law, ostensibly to strengthen the judiciary, but this law has never been seriously enforced. And naturally, once the CCP seized power, it adopted the class struggle as its guideline and proceeded to rob the entire citizenry. It promulgated laws against the crime of so-called counter-revolutionary activity, which applied to everyone, those who opposed the party's policies and theft. The CCP punished counter-revolutionaries with incarceration or death. And this difference is that the law under communism serves as an encyclopedia of criminal behaviors so that they can use it to identify the victims. Whereas the original intention of the law was to point out the fundamental change that happened to human natures, and thus leading to the crime. In the United States in 2020, I would not even call the lawmaking body the term, rather, I would call them a rule-making body. They're making rules to imprison and restrict under the guise of lawmaking. Rather, it is also used as a tool to kill the opposition. But this is not the real issue. The real issue is the lack of respect for the Constitution. The Constitution of China is replete with verbose language in an effort to show that the CCP is committed to the rule of law and civilized international norms. However, in practice, the Constitution never strictly followed, and basic rights such as freedom of speech, belief, and association are not actually protected. As well, take the Supreme Court here in the United States. As President Trump advocates for, the job of the Supreme Court is to interpret the Constitution as written. In fact, a lot of the same playbook tactics have already been experienced by the Chinese and the Russian people during their communist movements. Here now, just under the guise of a different name in the United States, is playing out in the courts of the highest order. Given the recent rulings of the lack of rulings, rejecting the cases of election lawsuits, it shows that from the top of the highest body of justice, there exists no justice. When the phrase justice is blind is said, well, it turns out in the Supreme Court today, the justices are blind. Now, if the highest constitutional court of the United States failed to uphold the Constitution at this critical turn of the, say, arguably the most important election ever, how would that signal that there will ever be another free, fair election?
And here's more from the sixth and final episode of Zhang's series. He's titling it Rejecting CCP and Its Global Ambition. Play sound by four, please.
Good evening, and thank you for joining us for this last episode of Communism in USA. In the last episode of this special series, we will examine how the West has fallen to communist infiltration from the Chinese Communist Party, just to get an idea as to how we have reached today.
where people are openly embracing communist culture, all the while without realizing the danger or the secret motives of the communist infiltration. What we must do to stop this. Communism has one goal. It's to bring about the end of free minds and freedom in general. It aims to create a blood-red covered earth, where there is constant bloodshed, fear, hatred, and struggle around every corner of the globe. The US stands as the last defense against this specter. With the current state of the country, there is a rapid approaching and rapid rise of communist ideology sweeping across the nation. The current state of the US being hollowed out from the inside while being invaded from the outside. Our only solution and hope is to return to our original compassion and love for God. And there is no human solution that can solve this problem if it does not stem from giving hope to the heavens. We can only achieve so much that is within the context of the human realm. First, we must recognize the position of the Chinese Communist Party as the number one enemy of the free world. And their attempt to export communism into the United States is a severe violation of basic human values, and it's anti-theist and anti-moral. These are all but the first steps. And then, within the United States, we must also recognize the far left's attempt to subvert the society through its adoption of communist tactics. We can do so by learning about how the CCP operates. Now, both of these actions must be nonviolent, because violence plays into the hands of the communist strategies as well. But we must resist by keeping up the traditional values that the United States was founded on, that the original intention of the Republic is to uphold. The CCP wants to make, quote, a community of human destiny, where we can clearly see that the communist specter is not satisfied with having power in just a few countries. Its ultimate goal with its communist ideology, in all its forms, features the ambition to dominate all of humanity. So we have this global agenda of communism worldwide, but it still needs to have those local movements. What stands between the world, communism, is the United States. Let's talk about hate. As the centralized idea of communism. In our recent episodes, we have been covering this very much, with the hatred against the US, whether that's between people or, say, China and the US, as being generated in ways with communism at play. The CCP ideology runs on hatred. The patriotism it promotes entails hating Japan, hating Taiwan, hating Tibetans, hating the ethnic minorities of Xinjiang, hating religious believers, hating dissidents, and more importantly, hating the United States. As it is exported to the West, in the United States today, the hate for their own country is this typical behavior driven by communist believers. Along with that is the need to manufacture racial division. Just as people face suffering each day, the bad actors use the people's suffering as the ammunition to spread hate. In CCP, with its culture, its hate against other nations in the name of promoting nationalism and patriotism. In the United States, its hatred against race, its hatred against gender. In each step, the two modus operandi is the exact same idea. To generate hate against a group of people. To delegitimize their position. Destabilize the nation and achieve chaos.
Now let's listen to excerpts from an interview with pro-Trump attorney Lynn Wood on what he calls the color revolution that's occurred in the U.S. This interview was conducted by radio host Pete Santilli on his Pete Santilli Show, March 26. The term color revolution has been used by worldwide media to describe political uprisings and revolutions against governments in nations around the world in recent years. Some observers, including Wood, contend that the U.S. and other countries have covertly been involved in fomenting these uprisings. Play soundbite 5, please.
Here's what's happened to us, Pete.
Yes, sir.
Our CIA, the deep state, for years, decades, we've been running color revolutions on third world countries where we take over their government. Now, in 2020, they ran a color revolution on our country.
Yes, sir.
The pattern is the same. We had no business interfering in other countries' right to choose their own leaders. Now it's come back to haunt us because the deep state, in conjunction with the globalists and the communists in China, have run a color revolution on our country to try to steal our government. They're not going to be successful. The people in this country are going to stand up. This is our country. You're going to see around the world, I think, that other countries, the people are going to stand up. We have no business as a country trying to tell another country how to run its life, its country. We can put America first, we should. Other countries should put their own countries first, select their own leaders. What we've been doing unlawfully to other countries is now coming back to haunt us because they've done it to us. They're not going to be successful. The people in this country are going to stand up. This is our country. You're going to see around the world, I think, that other countries, the people are going to stand up. We have no business as a country trying to tell another country how to run its life, its country. We can put America first, we should. Other countries should put their own countries first, select their own leaders. What we've been doing unlawfully to other countries is now coming back to haunt us because they've done it to us. They're not going to be successful.
Yes, sir. You are the first person to approach that issue, because I was going to mention that three-letter agency. Most people are, you know, obviously concerned to throw it out there, throw out that name that we know is involved. John Brennan, for instance, I've done the research knowing that John Brennan let the 9/11 hijackers, five of them, get through his Jeddah, Saudi Arabia, a station when he was station chief. John Brennan was in Moscow in March of 2016, 30 days before the Russian dossier. The Central Intelligence Agency and even our domestic sister intelligence agency, the FBI, they've been working in concert to help in this color revolution. And you're the first person to help me identify them and bring that forth. Now, you have brought forth a whistleblower that knows the inner workings of the corrupt people, those black hats, we'll call them, within the Department of Justice, the FBI, and so on and so forth, identifying who Rod Rosenstein is. You brought that whistleblower forward, and he's exposed some bombshell revelations. Is that information ever going to come to the legal system, and will he ever be able to, in a court of law, testify to what he knows and bring accountability to some of these people that he's worked with?
In our present legal system, the chances are slim, because our present legal system, our judicial system, is corrupt. But I believe things are going to change. The answer is, to the direct question of will he be able to testify, the State Bar of Georgia is trying to revoke my privileges. They're trying to force me to take a mental health exam without even telling me the factual basis for it. They say, we'll tell you the doctor was selected after you agree, and if you don't agree, we're going to suspend your license temporarily on an emergency basis. I sued the State Bar of Georgia in federal court 2 days ago. There's going to be a hearing at some point in the near future. I'm going to bring that whistleblower to court, and I'm going to let people see him on the stand. And when you hear him testify for several hours, you're going to conclude the same thing that I concluded after spending 5 days with him. The man is imperfect. We all are. But his story is solid and credible. Nobody in the media wants to go after the story. They want to accuse me of making crazy statements. I was simply repeating credible information from the whistleblower. The pattern is to attack the messenger, because they cannot attack the message. That's what's going on in this country. That's what they did to Donald Trump. They created a propaganda campaign against President Trump to make him appear to be something other than the body of his life's work shows and proves him to be. People bought into it, brainwashed 24/7 by our media, a propaganda tool of the Communist Party and the globalists.
As you may have heard, Lynn Wood, who's been an outspoken critic of opponents of President Trump, is under attack by elements of the Georgia State Bar Association, which Wood says includes people working for George Soros. It will be fascinating if this whistleblower mentioned in the interview actually gets to publicly testify about corruption in the U.S. government. Regarding this corruption as it relates to the election fraud allegations, here's some audio from an interview with Mike Lindell, CEO of MyPillow.com, strong Trump supporter and an outspoken activist working to uncover election fraud. More than 150 million people worldwide have now reportedly viewed his recent election fraud documentary titled Absolute Proof, which can be accessed on his website, Lindell lindell.tv.com. That's lindell.tv.com. After it came out, there was criticism that Absolute Proof didn't contain as much proof as it did evidence, and that more documentation was needed to support the claims made. Toward that end, Lindell is working on a new, more conclusive documentary he intends to release in the next few weeks, which he said will dump a huge amount of additional evidence and thus prove that the election was truly stolen. He also, just this past week, released a separate hour-long interview with a data scientist discussing the contention that a large and sophisticated computer network was used to alter votes across the United States, not just in those swing states. This video can also be accessed on Lindell's website. Besides all this, Lindell is setting up a powerful new social media network, which he says will allow free speech and be essentially a combination social media site that is a YouTube and Twitter-like entity. Be very interesting to see, and that's due to come out very shortly as well. Be very interesting to see what that looks like and to participate with it. Please play soundbite 6.
So I want to talk about. You want to talk about you're creating a social media platform. It's like a type of Twitter type of thing, because Twitter knocked you off. They've knocked me off a bunch of times. Where do we go from here?
Well, here, I'm going to get back to, we talked in the first segment here about the machines, taking away our First Amendment. Well, the other part of this equation is all the crooked platforms, but from Facebook, YouTube, Vimeo, Google, Wikipedia, LinkedIn, they're all together and they're all against free speech, okay? What they've done is all the influencers out there, anyone that has a voice, if you say the wrong thing, bam, you lose your livelihood. People, friends of mine that have podcasts and stuff, they're banned from YouTube, or they lose two-thirds of their Facebook people for saying the vaccine, or they'll have their opinion on the vaccine. They'll have me on, and my good friends at RSBN, I was on there and I told them to mute me in case before we got my platform up. I had them mute me, and they muted when I was getting into Israel and stuff and talking about what they're doing there with the vaccine and making people take it. Well, they took it down on YouTube for 2 weeks anyway, even though they had me muted, and it's a shame. But what I'm doing is, this will be 10 to 14 days. It's called Frank, Expression of Free Speech. You look it up. It's the opposite of everything they're doing now. And it's frankspeech.com. When we launch this, but it's called, the platform is called Frank. It is YouTube, and there's nothing like it out there. It's like a YouTube, Twitter combined.
Oh.
Your YouTube channel is your Twitter. It's amazing. We've been working on it 4 years. It's the most secure platform ever. I have all my own servers. I put millions of dollars into this for such a time as this. And they will not be able to break into it. When we launched Absolute Proof, everybody, when we launched on February 5th at 9 in the morning, first Vimeo took us down, then YouTube took us down, then we broke, and I'm not going to name them, we broke the other social media platforms because they couldn't keep up with we were getting 50,000 people a minute joining, 50,000 a minute. Well, when you get this, when we got to get this news out, we have to be able to handle this huge amount of people coming on, millions. Well, now over 150 million people have seen Absolute Proof. And the same technology we had on there that didn't break that site, we have on the new site, Frank. And then I will finish here. What we're going to do then for 5 to 6 weeks, all the evidence, by the way, that I'm going to dump, we're going to dump, it's going to make WikiLeaks look like a tinker toy. We're dumping all this evidence that we have. Now, you just seen a little bit of it in Absolute Proof. We're filming a whole nother documentary this week showing the foreign interference. And I hired investigators for millions of dollars to investigate all these people. Who's behind bots and trolls? We're going to find out who's behind the attack on this attack in our country and our good people. Who's hiring for cancel culture? We're going to find that out. We're going to drop all the evidence of the election fraud. The Supreme Court will finally see, and they will accept this. I'll tell you right now, in 6 to 7 weeks, they're going to accept this. It's going to be a 9-0 vote. You heard it here first, that this election was attacked by foreign countries. And when that happens, now, I don't know what they're going to do, but I did tell quite a few people that by August, Donald Trump will be back in as our president. He has been our president.
Now, this interview was on the Eric Metaxas radio show on March 21. The idea of a free speech combination of YouTube and Twitter is exciting, and I'm looking forward to seeing and participating in Lindell's new social media website. I'm also eager to see what his new documentary has to reveal. I wish I could be as positive about what results this evidence dump will bring as Mike Lindell is. I'm afraid I don't share his certainty that the Supreme Court, given its recent behavior, will accept or make any ruling about it, or that it will eventually reinstall Trump in the White House by August. As you may recall, people were predicting this was going to happen by April 2021, and all the other things that were supposed to happen but never came about. As I've said before, I'd sure like to be wrong about these things. With this in mind, and continuing on the subject of election fraud, let's wrap up today's show with more discussion of the subject from Overstock.com founder and former CEO, Patrick Byrne, from his new ebook, Deep Rig, How Election Fraud Cost Donald J. Trump the White House, by a man who did not vote for him. Byrne has stated that he often votes libertarian, and he made a point that he did not vote for Trump, but he's been so upset about what's happened in the election, he has been very involved in working with the people trying to uncover more about the fraud. The ebook is available for just $4.95 from Byrne's website, deepcapture.com. I just finished it and found it to be a fascinating read. Byrne has been and continues to be involved in the efforts to expose election fraud in the 2020 elections. His ebook is basically his perspective on how the election played out. In it, he cites quite a bit of election fraud evidence and makes the case that Trump was misled by his advisors and could have won the election by taking over and conducting investigations and careful recounts in the six key swing states that decided the election. Byrne makes a compelling case for this idea, though it was definitely unprecedented, and it's unclear to me that it would have ultimately been successful, though I would certainly like to have seen Trump doing it. I thought Byrne was unfair in his criticism of Rudy Giuliani in the book, whom Byrne praises for his patriotism but believes was unsuited for the kind of cyber warfare and computer manipulation the Trump campaign was confronted with. Byrne also criticizes Giuliani, who led the Trump campaign's efforts to stop the steal, as it was called, of the election, for being unwilling to stop doing Giuliani's regular weekly podcasts, the Common Sense series, which you heard excerpts from above here in this program earlier, and for Giuliani to devote his full attention to election issues. But Giuliani has about 500,000 followers of this podcast series on YouTube alone, another 60,000 or so on Rumble.com, and more yet on his website, RudyGiulianix.com. This is a major business enterprise and source of much important political information, some of which you heard earlier on this program. So I don't fault Giuliani for not giving up the podcast. And the fact that he did all that, and he did, and what else he did for the Trump campaign besides, says a lot about his stamina and dedication to his work. Still, Byrne delivers telling information and commentary in the book, and it's well worth the purchase price. CD Media came out with an article about Byrne and his team's effort on election fraud on March 30, titled, Byrne, America will know the truth within 2 months. It's possible Trump could be back in office. The article begins by stating, quote, CD Media spoke with former Overstock.com CEO and all-around election fraud fighter Patrick Byrne last night, and he revealed some shocking news. Byrne has been leading a cyber investigation team along with other well-known patriots to combat the coup that was perpetrated on America during last year's general election, where the illegitimate Biden administration was installed in the White House. Byrne revealed that within a few weeks, 2 months at the outset, America and the world, for that matter, will know the truth of what happened during the massive election fraud on November 3rd, 2020. Quoting Byrne, they say, "We have irrefutable proof. It's shocking what happened and who was involved. The information will all come out over the next few weeks. No one will be able to say this is not true." Close quote. And then the article continues, when asked if the comments by Mike Lindell were valid, that President Trump will be back in office by August, Burns said, quote, well, that's Lindell being Lindell. However, this information is so earth-shattering that, yes, it's possible Trump could be back in the White House by the fall, close quote. And he continues on with another quote, quote, we will reveal the truth. The remedy is up to the American people, close quote. Being a longtime Trump supporter, I certainly hope and, yes, pray that Byrne and Lindell are correct in their predictions. But up to this point, at least, the people who carried out all this have won the day. Toward the end of his ebook, Patrick Byrne has this to say about Donald Trump. Quote, I have indicated a lot of ambivalence about Donald Trump, but for the first time I have a clear understanding of the Donald J. Trump in our history. It's not about his mannerisms, his hair, his speaking style, his management style. What Trump did is figure out one big thing. The people of our country are suffering because elites sold them out. The people look at what has happened over the last 30 to 40 years and know they've been sold out. They understand that when they look at Trump, they are not looking at an elite, but one who wants to stand up, however coarsely, against the elites on their behalf. That is the source of appeal. That is his source of appeal. And that is what causes so many to look the other way on his personal foibles. Close quote. Now, I don't know about all these supposed personal foibles people see in Trump, but I personally enjoy seeing the president stand up to the bullies trying to destroy him with their propaganda lies and tell them off. More power to him. Anyway, back to Byrne's book. Quote, I agree with this worldview, unquote. Byrne continues. He's talking about Trump's worldview. Quote, I formed Deep Capture 13 years ago to document a war I would be waging against the same forces. The USA has become an oligarchy, and the oligarchy has two wings, Wall Street and the deep state. We are a republic grown corrupt, and the nation is not being run for the benefit of the people. Check. Trump's movement is inspired by the same reaction to the world that inspired Deep Capture. Check. Trump gets it. Close quote. In ending the book, which was published in early February, I believe, Byrne offers what he calls a weak hypothesis about the 2020 election, what the 2020 election means, and a strong hypothesis. The strong hypothesis offers chilling possibilities for what may lie ahead for us. To quote Byrne, if the strong hypothesis is correct, and this is a Chinese psyop, that is a psychological operation against us, there is a way you will be able to tell. Authoritarian measures will be imposed on the U.S. under the guise of stopping something vague like extremism. Biden will fill his administration with China doves, and he will reverse an executive order of Trump's to allow the Chinese to resume building components of our critical infrastructure, for example, electrical infrastructure. Because the political discourse is constrained by big tech and authoritarian measures, within 10 years there will be prison camps built next to hospitals for the purpose of organ harvesting from dissidents. By that time, Xi Jinping will have a button on his desk. One day he will hit it, the U.S. electrical grid will shut down, and over the course of 1 year, 90% of Americans will die off, and the USA will turn into a farm for which China's 1.6 billion people will be grateful. Those will be your warning signs if the strong hypothesis proves to have been correct. Close quote. Of course, he's referring here to the practice of harvesting organs from dissidents in Red China. Well, one of the first things Biden did as president was allow Communist China to bid and work on infrastructure of the U.S. electrical grid. One of the things Byrne calls a warning sign for the worst-case scenario. Sure hope, and yes, pray, Byrne's strong hypothesis doesn't come through. One thing to keep in mind is that despite all their efforts to brainwash Americans into believing that the insanity of the left's totalitarian policies would actually be best for everyone, and millions did succumb to this crap, millions more rejected it. And in reality, Trump, more importantly, his policies, won the election overwhelmingly. That means there are an awful lot of us who oppose the globalists and their communist allies. The resistance lives, and the struggle against their tyranny continues. That's it for another show. As always, we hope you found the information presented of value. We wish you all a happy Easter, Passover, or other holiday you may be celebrating, and a good evening.